Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast on OpenVPX, From Specs to Solutions. I'm Chris Schufo, Group Editorial Director at Open Systems Media. Of pertinence to today's eCast are our magazines, Military Embedded Systems, and, of course, VME and Critical Systems. The OpenVPX initiative was started in 2009 in response to a U.S. Department of Defense mandate for improved implementation of open standards and interoperability over the Vita 46 specifications. OpenVPX leverages the existing VPX specifications while further defining areas where existing specifications allow ambiguity about multiple or open implementations that might cause compatibility issues during system integration. OpenVPX solves these challenges and has been flatly just a runaway success measured by military program design-ins. Simply stated, the interoperable OpenVPX specifications are the next generation of the DoD's favorite deployed open standard called VME. Today's discussion will zero in on the OpenVPX architecture, improved interoperability between modules, backplanes, and chassis, and provide an overview of OpenVPX hardware available today. But before we begin, just a handful of housekeeping items. Today's total briefing will consume about 50 minutes, leaving us 10 minutes or so for questions at the end. On the audience console window before you, I encourage you to note a couple of buttons, the Enlarge Slides button and the Forward to a Friend button. With the latter, you can send an email to someone inviting them to participate live in this very eCast. As well, you'll also need to have all pop-up blockers disabled, or at least allow pop-ups from ON24. You'll also find on your console window a button that allows you to enter questions in real time. This is often the most interesting part of the eCast. We'll do our best to address all questions during the closing Q&A session. And if you have a question intended for a specific speaker or company, and note that we have four companies and four speakers today, please so note at the beginning of your question. That'll help me. Without a name or a company name, it's going to be difficult for me to get the question to the right person. And if you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, one of our technicians will respond back to you privately during the eCast to help you out. And note that as much as we'd like to, we may not get to all of your questions today. With four speakers, that's almost a possibility. In that case, someone may get back to you after the eCast with more information. And oh, yes, before I forget, somebody always asks, this eCast will be posted online within 24 hours. Often it's done the same day. More details at the end. So are we ready? I'm going to get off the podium here and instead announce our first speaker today, who is Steve Edwards, CTO of Curtiss-Wright Controls Embedded Computing. Steve began his career in 1998 at Dyfor Systems, a place I used to work as well, which is now part of Curtiss-Wright. He was a senior hardware engineer at that time. Since then, he has taken on increased responsibility as engineering manager, product architect, applications engineering manager, and chief technology officer. As CTO, Steve's responsibilities include promoting and leading the embedded computing group in adopting new technology, providing technical oversight to the several product teams, and overseeing and coordinating standards activities, right up the alley for today's briefing. Steve holds a BSEE from Rutgers University in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Steve, you're our first speaker today. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Thank you, Chris. And I am going to be talking today about giving a high-level overview of OpenVPX, where it is, and how you can build systems with OpenVPX. And I think to start off, really, there are three things I think OpenVPX brings to the table. One, as Chris mentioned, it is a system specification that builds upon existing board-level specifications like Vita 46, the VPX standard, and Vita 48, the VPX Ready standard. As well as other specifications, and it really builds system-level profiles or architectures out of those using those base specs. And one of the things that OpenVPX does bring to you is architectural flexibility. Because of the concept of profile, that is different routing, pinout, and switch fabric implementations, different backplane topologies, and allowing different slot and module profiles for different board content in there. It really allows you to pick system or pick an architecture within OpenVPX that best matches your system requirements. Another thing that provides for architectural flexibility is the concept of planes. The ability to have data, control, utility, expansion, and management planes in there are separate, essentially separate pins on the backplane that allow different types of traffic to pass over them, thereby segregating control and data traffic and allowing for maximum maximum performance. And then the third thing is pipes. Within the plane, the pipe defines the actual size of the of that plane. So, for example, an expansion plane might be might go anywhere from an ultra thin a plane might go anywhere from an ultra thin pipe, which is two wires, all the way up to a thin pipe, a fat pipe, which is four wires, a double fat pipe, which would be eight pairs, I should say, transmit and receive pairs, and then a quad fat pipe. So depending on the data you need to pass through your application, you have different size pipes to handle that data in the different profiles. Moving on to the next slide here. The other thing, too, is within OpenVPX, because it defines these profiles, these module profiles, which are payloads, so single board computers, DSP cards, I.O. cards, as well as switching modules, it allows for flexibility and allows for standard building blocks that each of the manufacturers, vendors of OpenVPX products then bring to the table. So we all have our products that we have that fit within certain profiles, and many of us have products that overlap one another on profiles, and so that provides a systems integrator with greater flexibility in being able to use standard building block COTS modules to build up their systems in these profiles. So then going on to next slide is really OpenVPX isn't meant to just hit a single point in time, but because it is a system spec that builds on other specs, and as new technology comes into play, then new profiles are created. For example, there are two VITA specifications right now, optical VITA 66, which is an optical fiber optic spec, and VITA 67, which is a coaxial or RF specification. Both of those are in draft format now and should be approved later this year. And when approved, there are profiles already in process where we are looking to incorporate VITA 66 and VITA 67 into OpenVPX profiles, so that as these standards are adopted by VITA, they then get adopted or then get created into profiles in OpenVPX. And the same is true for any other type of new specification that takes place. Over time, those specifications can also be adopted into VITA 65 or OpenVPX to allow it to continue to grow as new technology comes on board. So if you want to take that, so that was a brief overview of OpenVPX, but now if you want to take that and build a system with OpenVPX, how do you go about doing that? Well, the way you go about doing that is really it's a top-down approach. You have to start at your system level, define what your requirements are for your application, your size, your power, constraints, what your processing and data flow look like, how much bandwidth you need between cards in the system, what your I.O. is. Then you need to kind of look and see what kind of architecture actually maps to those requirements. What does my data plane look like? Can I use a distributed data plane because of the data flow, or maybe it's a smaller application, or do I need a larger application with more any-to-any type of movement, and I'm more better served with a centralized switch topology? Do I need an expansion plane? Do I need legacy? Do I have legacy I/O requirements like VMA? So then you take those architectural requirements, and then you look at what OpenVPX provides you with the different backplane profiles, and you pick a topology that most closely matches your requirements. And if there's something a little bit different, you know, OpenVPX gives you the starting point, and maybe there's something special that you need that isn't quite served with OpenVPX. You've got the concept of RTMs in a development environment, and then you can always spin that into your own backplane when you go and deploy. And then from there, you go and find the modules that fit into your backplane. And the little graphic there is basically shows that, you know, Curtis Wright, for example, has an OpenVPX System Designer's Reference Guide that really helps you kind of map our modules into backplane profiles so that you can see what modules we support, what their functionality is for every backplane profile that we have product for. And that just helps you kind of navigate through that through making choices. Now, when you are choosing the backplane profile, again, you know, I've talked about this a little bit, but, you know, you want to look at each of these planes, see what they bring to the table, and see how this helps you. So you've got the expansion plane, which is generally PCI Express. Direct connection between two or more payload slots. So typically, you've got slots that are connected together, or as this application, this profile shows, they're daisy chained together. It's very useful in applications where you need modules tightly coupled together. So GPU and and a CPU card, a storage card, and a storage module and a CPU card. In some cases, FPGAs and DSP cards, where you don't want to go over the main data plane, but you have more tightly coupled modules there. So then you want to look at the data plane. Again, this is your high capacity data movement layer. And, you know, OpenVPX offers two kinds of data planes: centralized, which is good for larger systems. It has one or more central switches in it. It offers you greater flexibility and, in many cases, redundancy, because there is a connection in cases where there are two switches. There are a connection from each card to each switch so that you have some redundancy. In many cases, you don't need that, though, and you can go with a distributed system, which offers you a better swap C, size, weight, power, and cooling. And then also, in many cases, especially if you're up to five cards, five payload modules, you can get an any-to-any interconnect there. So again, if you look at the control plane, the control plane is command and control information. It's generally gigabit Ethernet. One of the main considerations there is whether or not you're going to be UTP or twisted pair. There are switches that support both, depending on your system requirements, and depending on your needs. You know, one might be better than the other. In some topologies, there is no centralized control plane switch. It's an RTM that everything goes to. And again, that's another thing you want to take into consideration, as to whether or not all of your Ethernet needs to connect to a control plane switch, or you want to bring it all out to an RTM, or just all out to the end of the outside of the chassis. And then the management plane is typically IPMI, or it is IPMI, I should say. It's used basically for health monitoring and kind of off out of band statistical data collection. And one of the things there to consider is that not all Vita 65 modules have a support the management plane. And so it's, again, something to consider, whether or not that's important to you and whether or not the modules that you're going to be using need to have the management plane as part of their product. And this is just kind of this is my last slide here, and it's just kind of an example of kind of mapping an application. You know, in many cases, you've got an all-to-many summation or a serial summation, which is common in many DSP applications. Both of them can map well to this type of an architecture. So again, you want to take your application, map it to your backplane, consider what each of the planes brings to you, what your requirements are for each of those planes. Then once you pick your backplane, then you drill down and pick the modules that support that backplane. And that's really kind of how you go about building a system with OpenVPX. So Chris, I'm done. Now back to you.
Thank you very much, Steve. Our second speaker today is David Pepper from GE Intelligent Platforms. David is product manager/technologist for single board computers, and he's based in Huntsville, Alabama. David has been working in product management for the past 12 years with GE, primarily focused on standard form factors such as PicMeg and Vita, using Freescale and Intel technologies. Current efforts are towards achieving the highest compute densities possible in these form factors while continuing to recognize the need to address SWAP, which Steve just talked about, size, weight, and power, concerns of customers. Prior to GE, David spent 19 years at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center, most of that time as the development manager over the Space Lab Payload Crew Training Complex, hardware and software simulation. David is actively participating in the OpenVPX effort, and David also has a BS from Athens State University and an MS from Southeastern Institute of Technology. David, you're number two.
Thank you, Chris. This is David Pepper, and just for a couple of minutes, I'm going to talk a little bit about a specific implementation leveraging OpenVPX, and so we're going to talk about applying OpenVPX to a particular problem. In this case, we're trying to develop a high-performance embedded computer, so we'll use OpenVPX to pull that off. Quick bit about OpenVPX. Some of this will be slightly redundant, but I'll go through it quickly. Really think of it, in my mind, it's kind of a subsystem, if you will, or maybe making sense of VPX. So obviously with VPX, we can build boards and we can build systems, but with OpenVPX, now we have a framework that allows us to build, really, as Steve alluded to, an interoperable systems. So we've got definitions for modules, we've got definitions for backplanes, systems, chassis. So now we can kind of like boil this down to something that we can really get our arms around, and if a customer, for example, specifies a given architecture, then we have a good chance of achieving interoperability. So this is just a little bit that we've already went over, but I'm really going to be talking about it in the 6U context, but this is broadly applicable here. Again, we have the expansion plane that's available, and for example, the expansion plane might take advantage of PCI Express. We have a data plane, maybe 10 gig E, maybe InfiniBand, the control plane, usually typically a couple of channels of a 1,000 base BX. We can have an optional management plane, which would typically be IPMI, and then we do have, obviously, the standard power and JTAG and clocks and things of that nature. So it's really a well-defined framework that somebody can get their arms around, and once they understand, you know, the needs of a particular system, then they can start specifying the various attributes of it. So this is, you know, what a 6U board might look like, for example, and this is really kind of a general case. So, for example, again, we have P0, which would have power, utility, management plane. So we have P1 connector, which would be defined to accommodate the data plane. So it could be serial rapid I/O, could be 10 gigabit Ethernet, it could be InfiniBand. The expansion plane in this particular case is going to be PCI Express. And we have loads of user I/O spread across P3, P4, P5, and P6, and then embedded down within that on P4, in this particular case, we're going to have a couple of channels of 1,000-base BX via SerDes that would go across the backplane, and then maybe we've got a couple of ports of base T that could come out the rear to an RTM, for example, as was just mentioned. So applying all this now to a specific board, you know, this is what maybe a single board computer might look like. In this particular case, it's a Intel-based product, and if I call your attention initially down to the bottom, if you look, now we actually have an OpenVPX profile that's specified. So it's a module, it's 6U, and it's a payload module. So there's a format for the profile that goes along with it. In this case, you know, fat pipes, quad pipe, there's ultra-thin and thin pipes, and then there's a specific set of parameters here that, you know, you can look this up, 12.2.1-8 in this particular case. You boil down into it, and you can say, oh, okay, this particular product supports 10 gig base dash KX4, and it has a Gen 2 expansion plane, and we can also discern that it has both BX and base T gigabit Ethernet capability. So really you can take this defined profile now, and I can understand, okay, this is specifically what this board does. And then anything that would make it unique would be the user-defined I/O across, again, across P3 to P6. But this is just an example of what a payload board might look like and an associated board that might go along with it. And then I'm showing these two because we'll put them together in an example system in just a minute. Now we've got a similar board. In this case, it's a GPGPU, and it happens to have two nodes within it, taking advantage of a PCI Express to connect up with the GPUs in this particular case. In this case, there's a couple of NVIDIA components on this particular product. So we put all this together, and now we've actually got a fairly high-performance compute cluster here. And as you can see, we've got a couple of SBC624s now with by 16 PCI Express expansion plane tied into each of the two GPGPUs, so I can bundle this whole thing together and, again, leverage in the OpenVPX profile. And now I'm capable of pulling off a fairly high performance. We can see in this particular case about 968 gigaflops for this particular bundle. So it gives us the capability now not only addressing a particular need, I'm trying to do some really high-performance computing now, for example, within a 6U profile, but I've got the definitions that let me understand, okay, I know this board can connect to this board, that kind of thing. So if we take it just to the next logical step, now we put together an actual system showing the concept of all these put together. And we see what we've got is just kind of an example thing. Maybe I've got some sensor I/O coming in via mezzanine site. I've got some data I/O coming in via mezzanine site. And what we can see is we have, for example, a byte from an SBC624, in this case, tied into NPN240, one of the GPGPUs, and then I've got another of the GPGPUs tied into a byte of the next SBC. And you can kind of see what we've done here. We've really wrapped three SBCs around a couple of pairs of a GPGPU because there's two on each of the nodes there. And what I'm doing is trying to build a very high performance, in this particular case, about 1.7 teraflops, and I've consumed about five slots in a 6U system. So I'm really taking advantage of a couple of things within OpenVPX. I'm leveraging the expansion plane. I'm leveraging the data plane because I'm tying the computers in this case together, for example, via either 10 gig E, in this case I chose InfiniBand. And I'm using something like OFID, Open Fabrics Alliance. I'm leveraging that, and I'm leveraging the RDMA capability of the onboard devices to put together a very high-performance system. So not only can I have a tremendous compute capability within this particular chassis, but I've also got a fairly high-performance data plane now because I'm moving data across almost 4 gigabytes a second total, and I'm really getting quite an interesting-looking system now. So really, this is just kind of give you an idea. Again, we've got a standard in OpenVPX. It makes the definitions, defines the modules, it defines the slots, it defines the switches that they're needed. And now I can start taking some of these predefined products in this particular case, and I can start putting these together to build, a fairly interesting system. So this is just one example of what you might do with some OpenVPX compliant products. And last but not least, it's kind of an interesting little side note here. In this particular case, we were leveraging InfiniBand because we actually leveraged a component that could either do 10 gig E with RDMA or it could do DDR InfiniBand, and just have you a quick look at the reason we can get a fairly high performance data movement now is we can achieve upwards of almost 2 gigabytes a second using InfiniBand. And comparable Ethernet is a little less performant, but still, moving about a gigabyte a second across the backplane. So we can aggregate all that up to get not only a quite high compute density, but we can get quite a good data plane to move all this data across. So really, that's about all I had, Chris. I just wanted to give you a quick look at what a system might look like leveraging OpenVPX.
All right, David, thank you very much. Good explanations, and I appreciate it. I'm sure that there will be some questions with regard to those system configurations. Our third distinguished speaker today is Roger Hosking, Vice President and Co-Founder of Pentek. Roger is currently responsible for new product definition, marketing and sales activities, and strategic alliances with third-party hardware and software vendors. He has published and presented numerous papers, I'm not even sure numerous is descriptive enough, for technical conferences and industry publications. He has served as engineering manager and project engineer at Wavetech and Rockland Systems. He was responsible of the design and management of test and measurement instrumentation, including direct digital frequency synthesizers, FFT spectrum analyzers, and laboratory filters. Roger holds a BS degree in physics from Allegheny College, and a BSEE and MSEE degrees from Columbia University. Suffice it to say that Roger can spell FFT. Over to you, Roger. You're number three.
Thank you very much, Chris. Today, what I'm going to do is present a little bit more of a lower-level picture of what a particular OpenVPX architecture system looks like, and we're going to be taking a look at a beamforming system. We're going to go through, first of all, the principles of beamforming, which I think most of you are familiar with. You have a single source typically traveling to different antennas, an array of antennas, where the signal arrives at each antenna at a slightly different phase because the distance to each antenna from the source is slightly different. By aligning the phase shift and perhaps the gain of each of the signal paths, what you can do is line them up in time so that over at the right-hand side, when you sum the signals together, they constructively add and produce a much stronger signal, but aligned in a particular direction of reception. Signals in other directions of reception will tend to cancel each other out. So you get two benefits. You get an improved signal-to-noise ratio over a single antenna, and you also achieve a directionality to the array. Beamforming, I'm sure many of you are familiar with, is used extensively throughout a lot of different industries and applications, direction finding, a diversity receiver, frequency sharing in your cell phone towers, a single and two-dimensional array, radar systems, fire controls, and so forth. So we've really seen a lot of applications for beamforming, and OpenVPX is particularly well suited to some of the higher performance systems that that beamforming can require. So what we're going to take a look at next is an example of a system requirement, in this case a 16-element radar array, where we have 16 different antenna plates. These are shown here in the blue hexagonal shapes. And these then will be coming in at a IF frequency after down conversion of 70 megahertz to a 40 megahertz bandwidth. What we need to do is we need to down convert those IF signals to baseband, apply the phase shift and the gain shift to do the beamforming adjustments to steer the antenna, and then we need to sum those 16 channels together. Finally, we need to deliver the sum to a CPU for analysis and processing and perhaps adjustment of the steering or the direction or some other computation that the CPU may need. And lastly, this needs to be in a ruggedized, conduction-cooled 3U chassis so that it can be put into the environment that it was designed for, in this case, perhaps a UAV. So let's go into kind of an overall block diagram to summarize these requirements as a functional block diagram. Quickly, what you see there, you see the row of 16 antennas across the top of the diagram, and then we go through the RF to IF conversion. The IF signals are digitized with the A to D converter. The digital down converter takes that IF signal down to baseband, down to DC, where we then apply the beamforming weights, the gain in the phase for each channel. We sum the 16 weighted signals together, deliver that sum to the CPU, which then perhaps adaptively adjusts the gain and phase and the frequency control as shown down there in the bottom right of the diagram. So what we're going to use is a 3U OpenVPX module, and I'll build this up. We're looking at much lower detail than some of the earlier presentations that you saw. Because it's kind of interesting to see exactly how these modules connect up to the OpenVPX backplane. In this case, we have the COBOL 5361 3U OpenVPX beamformer module that has four 200 MHz A to D converters. And in an FPGA, a Vertex 6 FPGA, we implement four channels of digital down conversion with gain and phase adjustments and a x4 PCI Express interface right inside the FPGA. In addition to these resources, inside of the FPGA as part of its intellectual property core, we include a four-channel summation block that sums the INQ signals from each of the DDCs and then connects them through an Aurora, which is the Xilinx link layer, lightweight link layer serial gigabit serial interface, as a 4x sum in and a 4x sum out, so that you can accept signals from a previous module, add the four channels from this module, and then propagate a new sum out to the next module. In addition, the module features the connection to the VPX backplane through the use of a serial crossbar switch. This is a protocol transparent switch that connects up the signals, the three different x4 connections on the left side from the FPGA, over to the VPX P1, where we have four fat pipe connections over to the VPX P1 connector. The nice thing about the crossbar switch is it allows a flexible connection between the resources on the module and the backplane. So what we have looking at the module itself is a simplified block diagram here. This is the overall block diagram. Again, you can see all the features we just talked about, with the four fat pipe connections over to the backplane. This is available both in a ruggedized and a commercial version. Ruggedized is a full conduction cooled module. If we take a look now at how do we connect this to a backplane, what we've done is chosen for this system a OpenVPX 3U full mesh 5-slot backplane. The diagram in the lower left shows the connections between the five different slots, and it's kind of hard to see that drawing. But notice that the backplane profile is identified right below the drawing. This is from the OpenVPX specification. However, over on the right side, you see a more expanded view of the VPX P1 connectors that are interconnected for those five slots with those light blue lines that you see, each of which is a fat pipe, a 4X fat pipe that connects the modules. And the way it works is that each module connects to every other module with one fat pipe. That's the definition of the full mesh backplane. If we look at the application of this particular system, what we're going to do is put our CPU card into the lower slot, slot 5 at the bottom, where we have four fat pipes connected to each of the other four modules, and this we can use for a PCI Express link from each of the four modules on top to the CPU module, which we'll put in the bottom. And then we can also use the other four modules then to put our COBOL beamformer modules in, and these are located in slots 1 through 4. And so you can see that the green line shown in that diagram allow you to connect from one module to the next in a ring. So I go from slot 1 to slot 2, slot 3 to slot 4, I'm sorry, 2 to 3, and then 3 to 4. Notice that all of the fat pipes that are colored in the red with the red lines always go to the same connector on the module, that's DP04. However, based on the position of the module in the backplane, the fat pipes that are used for the sum in and the sum out are different on each module. So we have a different connection required for the sum in and the sum out on each of the four modules. So how do we address those different connections? Well, first of all, if we take a look at the module itself, you'll see that the crossbar switch can help us. In this case, what we've done is we've moved the PCI Express link directly across over to DP04 using the switch, and that's always the same for all four modules. But we can adapt the connection for the sum in and the sum out simply by throwing the crossbar switch path to route the sum in and the sum out to any of the three D DP01, 02, and 03 FAT pipes as required for the slot position that we connect it to in the OpenVPX backplane. So here we have all four modules installed in the backplane, and you can see that the connections that we need are shown either in red or green. Specifically on the backplane, what we're doing is we're running with the heavy red lines here, we're running the CPU card links directly into each of the four modules for control, for loading the coefficients, and so forth. So we've got that particular connection solved. And then we're highlighting here in the heavy green lines, we're highlighting the summation path that goes from module 1 to module 2 to module 3 to module 4. And each time we go through a module, we pick up the sum from four additional channels. So in the upper right, we now have the final summation of 16 channels sitting in that summation block. And what we do is we use the FAT pipe connection that goes from the upper right module, slot in slot 4, down back to the CPU card to deliver our final sum. So the whole thing that's done here is the backplane is used, the standard OpenVPX backplane is used to handle three different types of transactions, the PCI Express control, the Aurora summation, and then delivery of the final summation path down into the CPU card, all done using the standard links on the backplane. So in summary, what we're showing here is that the module itself has a complete beamforming solution, including the A to Ds, the D to As, the beamforming weights, and so forth. And it also has the summation block with the Aurora connections necessary for cascading the modules together. And it has the PCI Express interface built right in. What we found is that OpenVPX really does provide an excellent solution for high-performance embedded systems like this. It gives you support for multiple protocols, as we've seen. It's a very well-defined standard. It defines, as we've seen, profiles for all the components, cards, slots, backplanes, and chassis. And it really supports the rugged applications because of its very well-defined set of cooling standards for air, liquid, and conduction-cooled applications. So the last slide here, I'll just show you a link. This is what we have on our website. If you'd like some more information, please visit pentec.com, and you can get a lot of different resources, articles, white papers, handbooks, and so forth related to this topic. So that's the end of my presentation. Chris, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you very much, Roger. A number of questions have come in, certainly pertaining to your architecture. I'm interested to pass those on to you. Our fourth and final speaker today is Bob Sullivan, CTO, Engineered Packaging at another Curtiss-Wright company. But this time, Bob is representing not the Embedded Computing Group, as was Steve earlier, but instead the Electronic Systems Group. Bob joined Curtiss-Wright Controls Electronic Systems, formerly Hybricon, in 1997 as CTO, Engineered Packaging. He is responsible for keeping abreast of industry technology trends, setting technical direction for engineered packaging, promoting Curtiss-Wright's technical capabilities via industry articles, papers, and webinars, and defining technical approaches. Active on both VITA/VSO and PICMIG technical standards committees, Bob was a section chair/editor of the groundbreaking OpenVPX specification. Bob holds several patents and is responsible for protecting engineered packaging's intellectual property with patents and trademarks. Prior to joining Curtiss-Wright, Bob held various technical and management roles at Analogic and Genrad, including chief engineer, director of engineering, system architect, program director, and general manager. Bob holds an MSWE degree, as well as MDP, which is executive MBA, from Northeastern University, Boston, Massachusetts. Bob, finish up our briefing, would you please?
Okay, thanks, Chris. So again, my name is Bob Sullivan. I'm from Curtiss-Wright Controls, from the Electronic Systems Division, the Engineered Packaging Group. And continuing the discussion, the last two speakers kind of delved down into a little bit more detail, and I'm going to move up a little bit to kind of talk about OpenVPX and what really the problem was that we were trying to solve. And this slide here depicts really the problem that the users were facing. Number one, different modules from different vendors and even the same vendor might have different fabric protocols on the same pins on the backplane. You can see that here in the first picture on the left-hand side. And they could also have different pinouts where the same fabric might appear on different pins on the connector. So they had the same fabric implemented, but they weren't in the same place. And then because of these differences in implementation, a very high percentage of the applications required a custom backplane connectivity for interoperability between the specific modules. And that was true even for development applications. And, you know, certainly we've done, even today, we've done a lot more custom VPX backplanes, even for development applications, than we have done standard ones, although the mix is definitely going more in the standard direction as OpenVPX takes hold. Also, the other thing that wasn't really standardized was power and cooling requirements. The Vita 46 specifications really told you what the maximum current was that you could draw from the power rails, which if anybody actually did it, in most cases, you would have a fire. So what we did in Vita 65 was to define, you know, what some standard methodologies were and some standard targets were, so that the industry could kind of align. This slide here gives you kind of a high-level picture of how all these profiles fit together. And we start out from the top where we have the module profiles, which define the particular module and what the connectivity is that's coming off of that module is connecting into the backplane, and it also tells you what slot profile it plugs into. And as part of that module profile, it also tells you what protocols are actually being sent over the particular ports or planes that are on, implemented in that particular module. The backplane profiles tie together all of those individual slot profiles with a particular topology. And again, the picture depicts graphically kind of how this stuff goes together. And then those backplane profiles fit into standard development chassis profiles. One of the things that we did was to define what we call 5-volt centric and 12-volt centric power profiles. And that's in order to get more alignment in terms of what you can expect from the modules about where it's drawing the power from, because, again, the Vita 46 standards didn't really provide any guidance about where you should draw power from. And this over time is going to help simplify both the development chassis and the deployable chassis applications in terms of power. One of the key things from a chassis supplier perspective, which is where I'm coming from, is that in Vita 65 OpenVPX, we define these standard OpenVPX development chassis. And it really is a new breed. And the reason it's a new breed is that in order to address a high percentage of the applications of real OpenVPX payload that's out there, these chassis have a very high amount of airflow. They're required to have 18 CFM per slot at 0.24 inches of water at 5,000 feet, which is fairly high. It's not the most extreme that we've done, but it's up there, and it's well beyond what most off-the-shelf development-type chassis are designed to support. So what we've done is come out with new families of development chassis in order to be compliant with the spec. So as a user, you need to be careful to make sure that if you want to be able to pick from a wide array of modules that are out there, you know, including some of the hotter ones, you really need to make sure your chassis is up to it in terms of the power and the cooling that it has. These development chassis are both air-cooled style and conduction-cooled style, and they are implemented with both 5-volt centric, which means that the highest power is available on 5 volts, or 12-volt centric, which means the highest power is available on 12 volts. And just to give you a figure of merit, these are typically greater than 200 watts per slot of power for a 6U type chassis and greater than 100 watts per slot of power for a 3U chassis. Okay, all right. So this slide here kind of gives you a picture, and you know these standard OpenVPX backplanes compliant with the OpenVPX profiles in Vita 65, as well as development chassis that are compliant with the profiles, are now available. And that's, again, air-cooled or conduction-cooled. There is a wide selection of OpenVPX profiles to choose from. And as some of the previous speakers had stated, the vendors that are in this market space on both the chassis backplane and packaging side and the module supplier side can help the end users with compatibility. And I think Steve Edwards showed an example of a compatibility guide of which modules comply with which module profiles and slot profiles and what backplane profiles are compatible with. And that kind of thing really helps to speed the process for a user to configure a system. And there's a lot of new things coming as well. So in the OpenVPX Vita 65 family, there's a new revision of Vita 65 that's being worked on right now. It's adding additional profiles. We have a couple of new dot specs that are being worked on. There's the Vita 46.8 InfiniBand that was mentioned earlier by one of the other speakers. And Vita 46.11 system management, that's also in process right now. We have Vita 66 fiber optic, and that's an exciting new addition to OpenVPX that, again, is being added. And there is a base standard, Vita 66.0, and then there are currently three different types of fiber optic interfaces, Vita 66.1, which is an MT-style ferrule. The Vita 66.2 is ARINC 801, and Vita 66.3 is expanded beam. And this photograph here that's courtesy of TE, formerly Tyco Electronics, depicts those different types of fiber optic connectors. Other things that we have coming for OpenVPX, Vita 67, RF or coaxial on VPX, and this is useful for blind mating RF connections, typically through the backplane to cables, not necessarily, but typically blind mating through the cables. And we have, again, a base standard and two dot specs, one of them for 3U, which is a four position, which is what's depicted in the picture here on the right. And then there's a Vita 67.2, which is a 6U, which is a larger eight position SMPM type connector. And there's room for additional RF dot specs if there was a requirement for a different type of RF connector or a larger one. Another one that's very key going forward is Vita 68, VPX compliance channel. And I chair that working group. And this is to establish signal integrity compliance criteria for VPX backplanes. And that's really critical as we move to Gen 2 and Gen 3 speeds to make sure that the VPX modules and the backplanes are all compatible. When you plug them together, they're going to work. There's also a standard called Vita 62 for power supplies, and this is aimed at military-grade, military-class plug-in power supplies. And this photo on the right, again, courtesy of TE, shows the 3U and 6U Vita 62 connectors. So the point is that there's a lot of things still happening in Vita to extend OpenVPX to make it more useful for more types of systems, more applications. So conclusions, the integrators can choose from a wide range of standard OpenVPX backplane profiles off the shelf. The standard OpenVPX development chassis and backplanes are available, and they meet the demanding power and cooling requirements for OpenVPX. And also 6.25 gigabaud Gen 2 backplanes for Clear Rapid I/O or PCI Express or InfiniBand are now also available. as well as the development chassis, several deployable standard products for OpenVPX chassis are available, and I showed a couple down the bottom here. The Vita 65 OpenVPX standard provides a terrific framework that really provides the interoperability that the DoD was looking for. There is a lot of information there, but the leading suppliers can help the customers with the questions, and documents like the VPX compliance guide will really be helpful going forward for customers. So if anybody has any questions, my contact information is here on the slide, and I look forward to hearing from you. And I believe that's it.
Okay, Bob, thank you very much, and thank you to all of our speakers. Looking at the clock, we have less than 10 minutes for questions, and we've got quite a few of them in the queue. So I'm going to jump right into them, but I'm going to ask each of you gentlemen, when you respond, try to keep your answer to 30 seconds or just thereabouts. So as brief as you can make it, please. That will give us a chance to go through more of these questions. So, Steve, question for you. How does OpenVPX provide for vendor independence?
Well, I think, as I mentioned, there are a number of vendors making modules for OpenVPX, and multiple vendors support the same profiles. So when you get down to it, it's the module profile that supports, that defines not only the bandwidth or not only the size of the pipe on the backplane, but also what the protocol of that pipe is, so whether it's Seal Rapid IO or InfiniBand or Gigabit Ethernet or 10 Gigabit Ethernet or whatever. And so when you get down to the module profiles and you get down to the last few digits of the profile, that's really specific to those types of requirements. So you can use those to pick modules that support the same type of the exact same fabrics and the exact same size of the pipes, so that you can pick profiles or pick modules that match and work with each other.
Okay, very good. But there is another question very similar to that in the queue. It's addressed to GE. So actually, I'm going to ask David to see if you can answer that, and we're going to follow right on Steve's answer. What if no existing backplane profile meets my architecture, David? Won't backplane profiles keep growing?
They could, Chris. I mean, obviously, within OpenVPX, there's a fairly broad set of things. It's constrained, and we try to keep it that way. But, as the world evolves and as needs evolve, I mean, it's a committee effort. So it's a mix of, not only suppliers but integrators and things. So we really try to bring some stability to it. But, if there's really truly a need there, then it will be addressed ultimately via OpenVPX.
Okay, very good. Thank you both for your brief answers. Roger, there are two questions here for you that are very similar. I'm going to read them both, but I think you can probably give a quick answer to them. First question is, what is the OpenVPX profile for your Cobalt module? Second question is, in your beamforming example, what OpenVPX profile was used for each or all cards?
Okay, hi, Chris. Yeah, one of the things that's a nice benefit of that particular module is the fact that we have that crossbar switch embedded at the very end of it. What that allows this module to do is immediately assume the roles of about, say, 8 to 10 different payload and peripheral modules in the OpenVPX specification. Additionally, we have the ability for the FPGA, because it's an FPGA-centric board, to implement custom protocols in the FPGA to accommodate another, say, three dozen or so that are derived from the first protocol that's based on natural IP. So there isn't any one particular profile for this board that we've chosen.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Question for you, Bob. A couple of them that are very similar again, but I'm going to choose the one that I think allows us to be more specific. Brief answer, please. How well does OpenVPX translate to deployed applications?
Well, from what we're seeing, it translates quite well. We're finding that a lot of customers are able to use standard OpenVPX backplane profiles and modules in development. If it's an ATR, it's pretty much always a custom backplane anyway. And for deployment for air-cooled, even a lot of the deployed air-cooled chassis do have standard backplanes, standard OpenVPX profiles in them. But there's still a lot of custom backplanes, a lot of hybrid backplanes, mixtures with VME and VXS and so forth. And I see that probably declining over time as the OpenVPX ecosystem gets even stronger. But what we're seeing is that it does translate very well, and even if it does require a custom backplane for deployment, that is not preventing people from using the standard backplane in development.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Steve, are OpenVPX products interoperable or compatible?
That's often, in some ways, a hard question to answer. So let me answer it by saying that at the hardware level, products that fit the same profile are interoperable. So what I mean by that, if it's a Sierra Rapid I.O. Module and from vendor A and a Sierra Rapid I.O. module from vendor B that have the meet the exact same profile, then that Sierra Rapid I.O. and Ether and the control plane Ethernet are all going to be identical at the hardware level. And that goes a long way to defining interoperability. However, there's still the issue of one vendor's software working with another that is something that's been discussed but not dealt with yet in OpenVPX.
Okay, very good. Thank you. David, for you, for the 6U case, what data plane do you see as having the more common use case?
It seems like 10 gig E, Chris, just because the ubiquitous nature of Ethernet. I mean, it's really there. It's easy to support. The software exists, generally speaking, built into the operating systems. So I would definitely say 10 gig E has a good chance of being, you know, a good mover in that regard.
Okay. So one last question each, one for Roger and one for Bob. Roger, without your programmable crossbar switch, how might your OpenVPX implementation have looked different?
We would have chosen one of the profiles that the crossbar switch implements and tried, you know, and hoped that that would fit as many applications as possible. So of the eight or so that it does adapt to, we would have chosen one that we thought would be the best bet for most customers. That's all.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Question for Bob.
Okay.
Just lost my train of thought here. My apology. What is the general reaction of end users to OpenVPX? You've been doing it for a long while.
Yep. From what we've seen, the reaction of the end users is very positive because it lets them much more quickly assess, sometimes with our help, the compatibility of different modules and you can have a more interesting conversation about the architecture of the system and what modules might fit into it. That was very hard to do prior to OpenVPX because so much of this was proprietary.
Okay, very good. And I do have one question of my own, and both Steve and Bob alluded to it. Steve talked about an OpenVPX reference guide. Bob talked about something similar to that. Is that just a Curtis Wright-specific thing, or is there something available either from each vendor or publicly available from all vendors or from Vita so that a designer might come up to speed much more quickly? Anybody care to answer that quickly, please?
I'd say quickly, each vendor probably has something, Chris. I mean, I think you probably, if you poked at all of our websites, you'd see something along that line.
Okay, very good then. So that brings us right up to our time limit. Thank you, David, by the way, for answering that. Brings us right up to our time limit today. I'd like to thank each of our speakers from Curtis Wright Controls, Embedded Computing, and Electronic Systems, from GE Intelligent Platforms, and from Pentek, who helped make today's eCast a reality. I'm sure you'll agree with me that each of these gentlemen are bona fide experts in these areas that they've talked about. I don't think we could have had a more blue ribbon panel than these guys today. I'd also like to thank all of you who are following along remotely. There's quite a few of you, and there are quite a few of you who are actually in much, much different time zones than we're in today. As I mentioned at the beginning, we may not have had time to address all of your questions. That's true. There are probably a dozen or more remaining here. And as appropriate, someone may get back to you after the fact offline. The CCAST will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen right now, and it should be there within 24 hours, probably before the end of the day. You can also find an audio podcast of today's eCast on iTunes. If you just want to listen to the audio part of it and hear their melodious tones, look for the words, quote, embedded_e-cast. That's embedded_e-cast on iTunes. Thank you all for attending. We're adjourned. Good day.